Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. This week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to have two great guests. The first topic is with Thomas Dowd of Thomas Dowd Professional Development and Coaching. He's going to be talking about a job search success story. He was on the HR Power Hour just a while ago looking for a job, and he has landed. So let's listen to his story and how he made it happen. Second, we're going to be speaking with Colin Van Ostern. He is of the College of America, a new, affordable college benefit that employers can use that is fully accredited and transferable. Today, we're talking with Tom Dowd. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Dave. I appreciate it.
No, that's great. Hey, you know, we had you on just a few months ago, and you were talking about you were looking for a job, and you were out there in the market and learning all the things that you thought worked, may work, might work, could work. We kind of talked about it. You'd written about it. I mean, there was a lot going on at that time. And for the audience, I'm happy to report Tom now has been hired, and he's going to talk about the process, what got him there here today. So, Tom, kind of set the stage, if you would. Let the audience know where it was and what you've done in the past few months.
Yeah, no, thank you for asking. I appreciate it. I was at the same job for 23 years, same company. And completely out of the blue, on June 6th, I got the call that said, we're having budget cuts and you're no longer part of this company. And in that very moment is when I had to start my new job, and that was looking for a job. And the questions that go through your mind are you looking for something similar? What are the restrictions? Do you have in location? What do you want? What types of jobs are you looking for? Are you going to be able to financially be able to take these types of jobs? And do you want to be living here? Do you want to relocate? And all those things that come along with it. So those are the questions that go through my mind. But you mentioned these are the things that I teach people to do, because a couple years ago I started a business on the side, Thomas Dowd Professional Development and Coaching, where I help people to find jobs, or I help people that are stagnant at their jobs to find that fire and that spark to figure out how they can impact the business they're in. So it was this ironic twist that came along with that call of I still had training sessions with people, and some of which I spent a lot of time over the summer while I was looking for jobs with career centers, with libraries, with networking groups, and talking to a lot of people that were in similar situations.
When you really look back over the past few months, how about providing a couple of things that were maybe surprises? You know, you were showing how to do this, you were talking how to do this, and I know you and I have already had a little bit of a discussion. There were things that surprised you, weren't there?
Yeah, there were, and I was fortunate enough to have my company taken over, my former company taken over 5 years ago, and that was a splash of cold water to the face, because that made me, to some extent, realize I had to start networking. So I've been building a network over time, and a network can be defined in many different ways, whether it's using LinkedIn or whether it's talking to local people, it goes all around. So I have built what I thought to be a very strong network. And some of the surprises to me were, I got this call. It seemed to be a very calming day, believe it or not, because I felt good about the network that I had. And I started immediately. I literally started looking for jobs within hours of getting the call. And one of the biggest surprises to me was how helpful some people were that were part of the network that I would have never dreamed of. And so, for example, on LinkedIn, you can ask for a recommendation. So I went to several people that I haven't talked to in many years, and the responses I was getting back immediately were from people I haven't talked to in years, who I probably wouldn't have put a whole lot of stock in that they would even respond back to me, but they were there. to offer these recommendations for me. And what's interesting is the greatest support system out there is your family and friends. The least helpful of your network are your family and friends. And the reason I say that is they're too close to you. You know, they know you too well, and so they might be somewhat restrictive in some of the opportunities that might come your way. And the biggest surprises are the secondary and tertiary people I've networked with that I didn't even know were part of my network or became new to my network because of connections to someone that I knew. And it was those secondary connections who are the ones who finally landed me this job. They're the ones who said, I don't know you immediately, let's chat. And we talked, and they said, you know, I've heard a lot of good things. So now your networking was doing the work for you. And that was another surprise of that if you build the right support system and the right network, it can do work for you. And so you're not in this thing alone.
You know, it's interesting, certainly, when we all talk about career transition or career services. We always hear people saying, you know, I'm not really good at sales. I don't like to sell. But in fact, when you're networking, when you're out there, you're selling yourself, right? I mean, you are the product. And I guess one of the things that maybe you can share some thoughts on is people struggle with that, right? They struggle with selling themselves. Like if you give them a box of whatever, they can sell it. But selling themselves, so how do you, or how did you, I should say, think of packaging yourself?
You had it right the first time because it is an ongoing process. Once you get the job, networking doesn't stop. And that would be a lesson I would leave to everyone. But when it comes to building the network and having it, so you set up a meeting with someone and you actually have to have that conversation. And you sell yourself. Well, I'll tell you to stop selling. It shouldn't be about you. And that's what's interesting. When you're having this conversation with someone, you're without a job, in my particular case, but networking can be done to build your business acumen and not just while you're looking for a job. So that shouldn't be your goal. So I would start by figuring out what is your goal in networking. And if it is looking for a job, don't make that the primary point of the conversation. Make it about relationship building. What connections do you have with that person? What do you know about that person? What research have you done about with that person? And figure out what can they get out of it? Because you always hear the phrase, what's in it for me? You should ask that in networking as well. What can someone get out of this? And you know, hopefully they can glean some of the expertise that you have. They get to know you as a person because the networking goes beyond just what you've done professionally. It should be an introduction or conversation about what's going on. And when you stop making it about me, 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 let me tell you what I've done in the past. Let me tell you what I can do for you in the future. It shouldn't be about me. It should be about us. You know, what can we do to build this relationship? And how can I get to know you as a person? So think of it as a dinner conversation. When you're talking to your family, what are you talking about? And what questions might you ask? What type of curiosities are going through your head if you've done enough research on that person, whether it's through LinkedIn or through maybe you have a copy of their resume or you know them through someone else? You know, engage in the conversation and ask them questions. And once they figure out it's not all about you, you'll inadvertently sell yourself because you're having a real conversation. And when you sell yourself, sometimes we get to be this person we're not really who we are. And when you're doing this the right way, you become genuine, you become vulnerable, and people get to see the real you. And when they see the real you is when the real relationship is built, and that's what true networking is all about.
I think that's a great example and certainly an understanding that it's really about that relationship and building the trust between two people and building the ability for that person to see who you are and what you can really do to build, because you've got to build first a trust between two people. They got to feel like they can really understand who you are rather than really maybe what you can do. I mean, I always tell people that first impression is key, right? I mean, think about the fact that you're going to make an impression about that person. They're going to make an impression of you within about 30 seconds to a minute. And then we spend the rest of the time, you know, trying to build upon that first impression. Was I right? Was I wrong? You know, what it is. But that's human behavior. It's human behavior to do so. So, you know, when you think, Tom, of some of the things that you can right now tell an unemployed person out there, that you talk to them about networking, you talk to them about really building a relationship, what are some of the other things that you found that either were a surprise or were keys to your success?
I would start by saying know what you want and be laser focused in what you want. And that you can have a variety of things you're going after, but when you're going after that particular thing, be laser focused. And I'll give you an example. I thought one of my strengths was my flexibility. In my previous company, I was changing roles constantly. I averaged a new role every 18 months for 23 years. So I would go off marketing myself as this flexible person. And what people were looking at me, I'd say, hey, I can do anything for you. I've been able to adapt to new roles quickly. I'm a quick learner. I can come up the learning curve. And they say, wow, you sound desperate. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it wasn't desperation. It was, I call it extreme flexibility. But what I found is that it came across as I didn't know what I wanted. So what I started to do is remarket myself as being an expert in certain fields and having a broad business acumen in others. And by becoming more prescribed with exactly what I was looking for, it helped with how I communicated and how I related back to the position I was applying for, having a discussion about. And so that was very helpful. The other is you can't do this thing alone. And I know we've spent most of this time talking about network, but you can't sit in a room in front of a computer by yourself trying to figure out how to do this on your own. It becomes too tunneled vision, and if you open it up to let people help you with introductions or connections or finding people who might know someone who knows someone else is going to be very helpful for you, because removing that tunnel vision will give you one of the surprises we talked about was people are too close to you and may be restrictive in your opportunities. When you start to get more and more people as part of your support system, it opens up more doors for you because they're providing you opportunities you wouldn't have thought of yourself. And the last thing I'd leave you with is build it before you need it. And ask yourself the question, if you got that fateful call and you were going to lose your job today, are you ready for it? And what I mean by ready are you ready financially with a nest egg? Are you ready to start the process immediately without scrambling? If someone was to call you, could you begin the process today around your network and your support system? And if you're feeling like you can't, then now's the time to start. You know, test it out a little bit. Go back and reconnect with some dormant contacts you've had or start to talk to some people and ask them, who can I meet with that will help me to broaden my business acumen or help me to meet some new people who I wouldn't have met before. So start to build it now before you need it.
We're talking with Tom Dowd, owner of Thomas Dowd Professional Development and Coaching. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com. And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And we are talking with Tom Dowd, owner of Thomas Dowd Professional Development and Coaching. And Tom has just gone through the process of getting rehired, which is a wonderful thing, isn't it, Tom?
Makes you feel good when it happens.
Sure does. It does. And just as a quick point before we get into this next segment, there is a feeling when you get unemployed that there is a loss. They talk about it in the industry of being only second to death. But the reality is there is a feeling of, boy, I don't feel part of an organization. Something is missing. Did you feel that?
I did, because you look at it, the investment of 23 years with the same company, and it's gone immediately. And where I think the realization came to me is I still know the people that work there. If they truly are friends and colleagues, I could stay connected with them. So I looked at it as I was just broadening the number of mentors that I had and moving on. And it took a little while to get there, but I did feel like I lost my job, but I found me. I found out who I really was as a person. I got to see if I was practicing what I preached by giving as much time as I was taking of others and trying. Even in the midst of looking for a job, I found it somewhat balancing of helping others as they were going through something similar.
Well, you know, we're talking about helping others. You're in your quest and finding a new position. You spoke to a lot of people, people who were, you know, employed and unemployed. Tell me about those travels.
Yeah, it was interesting because I had some speaking engagements already set up, but I heightened that a little bit when it became clear that I should go speak to them and not only teach but learn. And so I was going to career centers. I went to one of the career centers in Lewiston, for example. I was down in Boston and went to a couple libraries where they had networking events, and they meet on a regular basis with people who are looking for jobs, and they share ideas. And when you start asking the questions of, all right, so your credibility is in question right now because you're supposed to be teaching this stuff to others and you're off looking for a job yourself. But I found it actually helped to bring the dialogue to a whole different level. I'm having discussions with people who are looking for jobs, and I'm off looking for a job myself, and they say, I get it. I can relate to what you're going through. And so we shared ideas, and I really feel like we got to a deeper level and generated a lot of discussion that may not have been there for someone just coming to present about how to find a job. But there were people that were in these meetings or these networking sessions who have been out there looking for jobs for 2 years. And they felt that they were either about to just give up, say, I'm not sure what I'm going to do, maybe I'll just go find a part-time job, or that they just felt like they were running in circles and kept doing the same thing day in and day out. And some of the people that were doing that, some of the examples came back, or they were almost too restrictive with their expectations. And what I mean by that is they might say, well, I only want a job within 10 miles of my house, or I'm only looking for a job in my current field of expertise. And so a lot of what we talked about was just you don't have to accept everything thrown your way, but be open to have a discussion about it, and that will open up a lot of things for you. And a good example of that would be people that would look at a job description, and they'd say, I don't meet all of the criteria. Maybe I only meet a third of it or half of it. And what we found was that you have to realize that is the perfect job description. That is if we bring in the perfect person. Well, no one's perfect. And I would put a rule of thumb that my friend from the Lewiston Career Center would say is if you're over the 50% mark, I would say go for it. And that when you start saying, I can do that, and they say, I guess I can. And so now you have more chances of landing something because you're giving yourself more at-bats in doing it. So on some of the resumes that I was looking at, I found that there was nothing wrong with them, but I would call them average. And what I mean by that is if you were looking at 10 of these resumes, which is the one that is going to stand out for you? not because of some really large font, but stand out because it you are differentiating yourself from the masses. And I think that's one of the bigger things that you can concentrate on as you're going through this process is what makes you special. And if you don't know, start to figure it out and ask yourself the question. And when you're done asking yourself, ask the others around you, well, what gravitates you to me? what makes me special?
I mean, you're right, because the end of the day, you know, when you're looking at a resume and you have the same qualification and skills as somebody else, it's what you did with those qualifications and skills. It's what you've accomplished. It's how you've done it. It's the roles that you not only played, but how you did that role and what you made for change. And those are the things that people look at to differentiate between, you know, who you are and what you did.
And I like what you said there about concentrating on the role. Not once did you say what company did you work for.
You're absolutely right.
And I think sometimes we try, back to the identity question of, I lost my identity when I lost my job with that company. And I was looking at my resume, and I'm someone who teaches people how to write resumes, and I've had a version of the same resume for 8 or 9 years, and my company was front and center. And as I continue to talk to more people like yourself who teach people how to do this, and we shared ideas, the company became less important to me, and it became, what are you competent in? You know, what are the skills that you have, and what have you accomplished in the past that you can bring to the future? And all of a sudden, those things start to pop on the resume, not the company.
No, you're absolutely correct. You know, we have about 3 minutes left here in today's segment, and I want to make sure that you have an opportunity to provide the listeners, the HR professionals, maybe people who are looking for a job out there, maybe a few of the top tip things that you really want to get out to them and have some takeaways for them to make sure that they do.
I would say know what your strengths are. And know, if you don't know what your strengths are, go in and do an in-depth assessment of yourself. You know, are you a strong relationship builder? Are you strong in sales? Are you strong in research? And go in and figure out what makes you, play to all of your strengths, and then go back and target some of the roles that are out there to play to some of those strengths that are out there. I would also say understand the companies that you're applying for, having discussions about. You're not going to always apply for the jobs that are there. And that is, understand the culture. And it's not just about a job. It's about fitting into the right organization. And what I mean by research, it doesn't mean just go to their website and say, and look at their mission statement. Now, that's just a piece of the pie. Talk to people that know the industry, that know that company, that currently work there, who used to work for that company, or who have applied for it in the past, and start to figure out, is that a company that you even want to pursue? And the final thing I'll tell you is continue to build the network, even when you're not looking for a job, so it's not a surprise. Have that conversation. Go back to tools such as LinkedIn or Facebook or other social media that's out there. Have lunch with people and start just having real conversations with people. And so if you're unfortunately thrown into a situation where you do have to look for a job, it's not going to be as daunting because you have people that have your back.
I think that's a huge takeaway, Tom, because I think that when really you think about what you needed to do, had you not had some connections, had you not already been out in the workplace, you know, out in the marketplace, if you had just stayed in the workplace, then you would have had a lot longer process to try to get back in and really have the connections you need to make a difference and find your next job. So I think that's absolutely critical.
And if just for just a quick second, I'll toss in there that when you do get this call, you talk about timing there, you can't wait. You can't wait to give yourself a breather because there are other people out there that will be getting the job.
No, you're absolutely right. There is no time to waste, none whatsoever. Well, Tom, I want to thank you very much for being on the show again today. We said we'd have you back when you found that position. You made it happen. Congratulations on your new job.
Thank you so much.
Tom, thank you very much for being on the show today. And again, we were talking with Thomas Dowd of Thomas Dowd Professional Development and Coaching, LLC. You're going to be able to go to the HR Power Hour after this segment and be able to click on him, get the information, and certainly has a great book out there. Look, he's an author, he's a trainer, he's a coach, and he's an overall great guy. Thanks again, Tom, for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back. Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Today on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be talking to Colin Van Ostern. He is the Director of Marketing for College for America. Colin, thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, this is a brand new college, and I think one of the things that I'd like to establish right now is, first, you know, where did this topic come about? Who made the decision to bring this to life? Why now is a good opportunity to bring a new college online?
Sure. Well, College for America was founded by Southern New Hampshire University, which is a nonprofit, 80-year-old traditional campus here in New Hampshire. And a number of years ago, after seeing some really successful growth with our online program, our online higher education, but it's still traditional online classes, our university president gave us a charge to come up with a higher education degree that's really focused on fixing two problems. One is the rising cost of college and inaccessibility of a college degree to so many Americans. And two is what seems to be a growing skills gap in the workplace, where employers are reporting that employers just don't have the basic skills that they would expect. And so we kind of redesigned a higher education to satisfy those two issues, to make it more affordable, more accessible, and more accountable to the actual skills that folks need in the workplace.
And I know that the college was also founded with a Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation grant in 2012. Tell me a little bit how that was involved.
Well, you know, we're really pushing the envelope in terms of the cutting-edge innovation in higher education, and we've had a tremendous amount of support in doing that. One is through a grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which really is looking for different models of innovation and education of all stripes. You know, we're specifically looking at higher education in our program, and specifically higher education for working adults. But you know, the Gates Foundation focuses on strengthening education at all different levels, not just what we're doing. And then the second group, there's a group called the Lumina Foundation, which is also devoted to improving and innovating in higher education across all different schools. And so they also have given us a grant to help develop this program. And we've put a lot of work into it over the last couple years and just launched as a pilot last spring with about 500 students from companies and nonprofits and other areas, other employers across the country.
So I think this is the important part that I want to get out to the listeners, because probably people listening thinking, okay, it's a new college. What does that really have to do with HR and employers? This is targeted towards companies and organizations, nonprofit, for-profit, to help them improve their adult workforce and skills and needs. So could you kind of explain why this revolutionary idea for online development in those areas came to life?
Of course. So we work exclusively with employers and working adults. So we're not open to anyone to find us online and apply. We work with employers like McDonald's or ConAgra Foods or Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield has call center workers that are studying with us right now in Maine and New Hampshire. You know, our program is really built for working adults and specifically for folks who either never made it to college in the first place, they couldn't afford to go, or just didn't work for their busy lives, or perhaps they took some college and dropped out, often due to cost or family commitments. It's usually frontline employees. We have folks who work on the factory floor, call center employees, folks who have a high school education and are showing some promise in their work, but really are being held back from contributing more to their own career and to their company's success because they just don't have those credentials and higher education that's needed in order to grow in their own career.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was talking to an executive for a bank, and they were talking about how they've changed a lot of their job descriptions to require education, for example, for people to move up at different levels. And some of the people who had been in the organization for a period of time don't have those degrees. And so they were encouraging online education. They were encouraging people to go back to school to continue to build on their own personal development, which would certainly help the organization as well help individuals. Do you see companies looking at this as a huge benefit to their employees?
We do. We see it in a few different ways. One is we have companies who have aging workforces, so particularly as the baby boomer generation retires. We have companies who are concerned about succession planning and how to bring more folks into their middle management and even senior management positions. And we also see companies that you know, really want to have a better accountability in the skills that their employees can bring to bear. But the truth is that traditional education often doesn't work for a lot of these students. That's one of the reasons that they don't have a college degree in the first place. Sometimes it's just because of expense. The cost of college has risen astronomically and student debt is just out of control. But sometimes it also just doesn't fit in their lives between juggling a busy family and often working full-time hours. You know, it's difficult to find time for traditional courses and classes and lectures, and it also sometimes doesn't make sense for some employees. So an example would be, you know, if you've been working with numbers and spreadsheets on the job for the last 10 years, spending 16 weeks in an introductory math course at a local community college or a good online school is going to be using up a lot of your time that probably you're not learning that much out of. Alternatively, you might not be able to learn how to write well in a 16-week course. You might need some more work on that. It's not what you've been doing in your job. And so our program at College for America really is the focus is making education mandatory and time flexible. So if you can master the competencies in a project quickly, you can move on to other work. If you need to spend more time on it, working with a coach and additional resources and a mentor and other students, you can take much longer than you would. The key is you have to master the work. And because of that, employers are telling us that they, you know, think there's a higher level of accountability in the degree itself.
When this program was put together, why make it all online? Why not incorporate some degree of in-class study?
Well, you know, we're trying to have a program that's, first of all, scalable so that folks can access it anywhere in the country. And second of all, that really meets the type of learning environment that students rely on most. So, you know, I mentioned that we have folks in call centers here in New England. Our first graduate was working at a ConAgra. He still is working at a ConAgra plant in Troy, Ohio, a Slim Jim factory. He was working the sanitation shift, generally took his classes at somewhat odd hours based on the shift that he was working in, but he could do it online, work with peers from ConAgra or other companies around the country, and do it in a way that's much more flexible and project-based than what you would expect at a traditional course. You know, there aren't a lot of colleges open at you know, midnight or 3 in the morning when you get off a late shift. But you can still do that learning online if that's what works for your schedule.
When you're talking about trying to make sure that skills that are needed in the workforce today are put in place, take me through a little bit of the programs that you offer. Take a little bit through an understanding of how that can actually help a workforce today.
Sure. So, you know, our first degree that we've offered is an associate's degree in general studies. And I should say, you know, we've talked a lot about the accountability and the accessibility, but the third feature here for us is that we've made it revolutionarily affordable. So the degree is $2,500 a year, which can be about the tenth of the price of a traditional associate's degree program. The associate's degree in general studies encompasses all the same competencies that you would see at a strong associate's degree program at any other university. So an example would be, we don't have traditional courses, but we do have a set of 120 competencies, things like can use charts and graphs to convey information. That would be one competency. And the way that we help students with the learning and the way that we measure their competency is through projects rather than through courses. So let me give you an example of a traditional project for us. So a project might be this. You inherited a task from a fellow employee at your job who abruptly left their job, and they were working on figuring out which vending machine to get for the break room. They had gotten brochures from three vending machine companies. They had done a survey of employees to see what kind of foods and how often they would buy them, and they had started to fill out a spreadsheet, but it's not complete, and there might be errors in it. Your task in this project is to look at the information and the resources that you have, finish the spreadsheet that they filled out, draw some conclusions about what would be the best in terms of satisfying the employees' needs expressed in the survey and the most cost-effective for the company, and then write a business memo recommending to your boss which of the vending machine companies should be used. So that project incorporates three or four different competencies. You need to be able to do some basic use of spreadsheets and mathematical arithmetic analysis. You need to be able to do some basic writing and writing a business memo. And there are, I think, one or two other competencies incorporated in that project. And so we have a learning coach who will help students with that. We have peer work, so a number of the projects are group-based. That one in particular was an individual project, but we have others that are team-based. And we find that this is a very effective real-world learning environment for students, rather than kind of sitting through a lecture and reading in a textbook and then then learning in that method.
No, that's great. When you're talking about an individual who comes online and takes these courses, is this done through Skype? Is this done through or a program like Skype? Or is it done through audio? How does the program actually take place?
Sure. So, we have a learning environment that we have built online where students come in. It's multimedia, so a lot of the projects are kind of expressed in a written fashion, like the one that I just gave as an example. And then there are resources that we use, so there'll be videos they can watch that we posted online or from YouTube. There'll be written material, so, sections from literature or essays or work product that they can read online. They interact with our coach usually through a Google Plus, Google Hangout, so that allows for both an audio and a video interaction with their learning coach on a regular basis, so they can do it by phone as well. We try to be as flexible as possible and fit what the students' needs are. And the work product that we require really reflects the range of media that you would see in a workplace. So, the writing requirements, for example, for someone to have graduated with an associate's degree across all their different projects, they need to have written business memos, blog posts, research projects of five or six pages in length, a total of 25 different writing assignments. They also need to have put together PowerPoint presentations, made a couple videos of their own, tape themselves in giving a presentation so that they can work on their own communication skills. And we find that those it actually ends up being a transcript that, instead of just giving a transcript to employers at the end of this process that says, you know, they got a B in Marketing 101, our transcript has this traditional course equivalence, but it also says, here is a copy of the presentation that they give, a video of the presentation that they gave in the marketing project that they did, and a PowerPoint presentation and a business memo that they wrote. And the result is that employers have much more concrete deliverables that they can use to judge candidates for promotions or for other jobs than just knowing that the guy who got a B did a little bit better than the girl who got a C in that particular course.
That is great information. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com. And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com. And today we are having a great conversation with Colin Van Ostern, and he is the director of marketing for College for America, a new college that's out there for organizations to look at for their employees. And I think that's where I want to start this second segment here, Colin, is talk about organizations. We've kind of talked about what it's about, what it can do, but why would a company want to take the time to go to this new college versus maybe an organization they may be familiar with, or maybe their alma mater?
Sure. You know, we find that what's most attractive to the employers who have partnered with us now is really two things. One is that our program is built flexibly for the adult learner. So it's not a traditional college. You know, the fact is most folks learning in higher education today aren't high school graduates who are off at a traditional college campus getting their degree before they enter the workforce. And the ones who are the students that, who work at our employer partners definitely aren't that. They work often heavy part-time hours or full-time hours, and they need a learning environment that's really built for them. And so built for them means that it's flexible and project-based and self-paced. It also means it's radically affordable. So because there's not a traditional campus, and because our work tends to be more project-based and utilize a lot of free online resources, they can expect that it's both high quality, it's a fully accredited transferable degree, but it's also a degree that costs a fraction of what a traditional college degree costs. So in most employers, they offer some sort of a tuition reimbursement, and it's common that that tuition reimbursement will be capped at several thousand dollars a year, and usually it's used by folks who are kind of in middle management who might use it to take a class or two at a time at a local community college. Well, with College for America, the existing tuition reimbursements that most companies have often will cover 100% of the cost of our college degree, which means that they can have frontline employees who often don't have a lot of disposable income to spare, who can be covered by their existing tuition reimbursements and can gain some really concrete job skills and a transferable, accredited college degree that can help them in their career. And then the other piece on the cost is we're actually the first competency-based higher education institution in the country to be certified for federal financial aid. So that means all the traditional Pell grants or loans, our students are eligible for those. So, you know, if you're working as an hourly earner, earning, say, $20,000 a year or less, and you're single, chances are pretty good that you're eligible for Pell grants to cover a lot of the cost of this degree that we're talking about. So for employers, it's a really low-cost way of solving some really significant issues around retention, succession planning, and having employees who just have more accountable skill building than they have today.
No, I think that's great. Well, you brought up the amount about cost. Do you mind taking me through what that cost would be for an organization or an individual, or maybe some ranges, because obviously it may be different for individual courses?
Sure. So, you know, it's a really different cost model. It's basically all you can learn. So our program costs $2,500 a year. Traditionally, our students for an associate's degree is a two-year, roughly two-year average amount of time. So in that case, it would cost $5,000 usually over the course of 2 years. Most of our partners, so we partner with folks like I mentioned, McDonald's or ConAgra or Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield. Usually they have tuition reimbursement programs, that so the employer is paying most of that using an existing benefit that they already have today. Sometimes the students are paying all or part of it out of their own pocket. But what's really remarkable is that time is totally flexible in our program. So we actually have some students who really had already learned a number of the things on the job before they even enrolled in our program, and it never would have made sense for them to take 2 years and spend tens of thousands of dollars for a college degree. But because they were able to demonstrate that competency quickly in a number of areas and a number of projects, we've graduated 10 students who've graduated in less than half a year. So, ranging from 4 to 5 months for their entire degree, which means the degree costs them a little over $1,000 for a fully accredited, high quality and transferable associate's degree. It's really unheard of.
No, that really is when you really think about it from a cost perspective. And from a benefit perspective, when you really think about the fact that employees earn more when they have a degree and have the ability to move up the corporate ladder or move in an organization and have a skill set that is needed to, quote, check the box for some of the organizations that make this now required, that is a very reasonable cost compared to other universities and colleges out there. So I guess the question that will always come up, right? The question that will always come up is, why so cheap?
Well, we actually designed it that way. We built this. If you're going to have an education degree that's built for frontline workers, generally relatively low wage workers who never made it to college or dropped out or couldn't afford it in the first place, you have to have as a constraint the fact that it just can't cost that much. And some of the ways that we've taken cost out of the equation are, you're not going to find some of the amenities that you would have at a traditional college environment. So if you're a high school senior who's graduated and your family's in the middle class or upper middle class and you're willing to take out tens of thousands of dollars of loans, there are some huge advantages that you might have, say, in having a really beautiful campus with an amazing dining facility and a gym, and you're surrounded by folks who are learning in that environment. And that's great. That's great for some folks. It's a minority of the learners that are out there right now. But by not having some of those physical structures, we can offer learning that's just as high quality at a much cheaper price. The other way that we've taken cost out of the equation is by having a lot of the learning be done on a project-based model using online resources that frankly didn't exist 10 or 20 years ago. We don't require students to pay thousands of dollars to buy textbooks, because the truth is, for most of what you need for our degree, those resources are already available online, and the work we do is collecting them, ensuring that they're of high quality, putting them in front of the students for the projects that they're on. And they have coaches that they work with, but we're not a research institution. College for America doesn't have tenured faculty who are doing groundbreaking research and really expanding human learning and human knowledge, in field as thought leaders in their fields. We're focused on learning and student learning rather than that level of thought leadership, and so we save a lot of money for our students that way.
Well, the question of faculty obviously comes up. So if you were to give me an example of what their credentials are in terms of allowing individuals out there, companies out there, to know that they're going to get quality training and teaching.
Sure. We have to start with the fact that because we're developed by Southern New Hampshire University, which is an 80-year institution and has educated tens of thousands of students, it's grounded in a really good place, and that our degree was built off an existing degree, and we have that as an ongoing benchmark to challenge ourselves and maintain a high level of accountability. It also is fully accredited by the New England Accrediting Association, as the oldest of the regional accrediting associations in the country. And what we've done is we disaggregate the traditional faculty role into a couple different areas. So our students work with a learning coach who mentors them and helps them through the learning process. Learning coaches have advanced degrees. They're professional educators. But they're not issue area specific. They're student specific. So they'll work with a student and they'll help them in their process. They'll help them when they hit a roadblock. And that's separate from the role of a traditional faculty who's issue area specific. So in issue areas, we have evaluators who do rigorous and timely evaluation. So every project that's submitted has to get a rigorous and detailed evaluation back within 24 to 48 hours back to the student. But the evaluators don't interact with the students. So their evaluation is done based on the quality of the work and whether the work is mastered or not. It's not based on how much they like the student or how well they've been working together. We find that by disaggregating those roles, you get more mastery and rigor in the actual evaluation. And you also have a stronger relationship with between the student and their learning coach, which will help them succeed and have some higher persistence through the program. And then the last piece is a lot of the learning, the way it happens in the real world, happens from peers. So we have projects that are teamwork-based projects, students who are working with other students who can challenge each other and challenge themselves. And then we also ask each employer to have a mentor assigned to students, somebody from within the organization who can help them, someone who can really understand that the role that they've been in their organization and how they can succeed and learn.
Well, this has been very informative and interesting. Colin, tell me where we can go or an organization can go to find information on your program.
Well, collegeforamerica.org is our website, and I would encourage folks to go there. We have some additional videos, examples of projects, ways that folks can get more information or ask us for more information. We've had the benefit of getting some great publicity. In fact, just 2 months ago, the President of the United States, who gave a major speech about how to reduce the cost of higher education and strengthen our college degree programs, and he cited College for America at Southern New Hampshire University, called it out by name as one of the most innovative things that we can do to drive down costs and increase quality in higher education. So we've been getting a lot of interest. We have a number of partners, both corporate, nonprofit, public sector, and we think that most importantly, we've helped change some students' lives, and that's the feedback that we're getting now.
No, that's great. And on HRPowerHour.com, you'll be able to go after this show and see Colin's remarks and obviously download this show if you're interested, as well as click on information and go directly to that site. Colin, I want to thank you today for being on the show and providing information on this brand new experience or benefit, if you want to call it, for organizations out there in America today.
Thank you very much, and I look forward to talking with you soon.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLLB. And now your HR Tip of the Week. According to Career Builder, which puts out a survey of excuses employees use for being absent at work, here are some of the top ones. Employees' false teeth flew out the window while driving down the highway. Employees' favorite football team lost on Sunday, so needed Monday to recover. Employee said that someone glued her doors and windows shut so that she couldn't leave the house to come to work. How about employee claimed a swarm of bees surrounded his vehicle and he couldn't make it in? And I'm going to leave you with this last one. Employee got lost and ended up in another state. These are HR tips of the week that you should not use when calling in sick. And that's your HR tip of the week. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to have a pair of great guests on our show. First, Ruth Lund, VP Organizational Development at Legacy Supply Chain Services. And then Phil Clothier, Chief Executive Officer of the Barrett Value Center. They're going to be talking about, did you hire Deadwood or did you kill it? The Value Center, VALUESCENTRE, is an organization that helps you measure the level of fun and level of engagement of your organization. You can use these tools to really help with the culture and the fit of the individuals in your organization and really get behind your mission and values and not make them just a plaque on the wall. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at hrpowerhour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.